Hechel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is the 12th tape in the series entitled Workings of the Mind Part 1, Chachma and Bina, recorded live at Hechel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York.
Good morning to all of you. We are in the middle of Perek Gimel, the third chapter of Tanya, the last line of Dav Zayin Amid Aleph, 7a. The last words of the line, Ubir Ha'inyin. Last week, in the beginning of the Perek, Reb Shneur Zalman, the Alter Rebbe, discussed the fact that every single soul, and over here he's referring to the divine soul, to the Nefesh Alekis, possesses 10 faculties, 10 attributes. These are 10 modes through which the soul manifests itself and experiences itself. He says that these 10 faculties correspond and actually evolve from the 10 supernal spheres, the 10 attributes that Hashem projected and emanated from Himself, which were the spiritual building blocks of the entire universe and everything that is in the universe. These 10 faculties are more generally, he said, divided into two parts, two sections. One is the cognitive intellectual experience consisting of the 3 intellectual faculties, Chachma, Bina, Das, conception, comprehension, and application. Those are the first 3 spheres, the first 3 characteristics that Hashem, so to speak, projected from Himself. And then there are 7 emotional faculties called the Sheva Midos, the 7 spheres, which are the emotional and passionate experience. And the human being also possesses these 10 faculties, and again, 3 intellectual cognitive faculties of Chachma Bina Das, and 7 emotional faculties, which are Chesed, Gvura, Tiferes, Netzach, Hoid, Yisoid, and Malchus. Attraction, rejection, integration, endurance, devotion, bonding, and royalty. The Alter Rebbe continued to say that the 3 first intellectual faculties, Chachma Bina Das, or their acronym Chabad, are called mothers, the 3 mothers, Shalish Imais, due to the fact that they are the mothers and the source for the Midos, which are deemed to be their offspring and offshoot and a birth, children, so to speak, from the faculties of Chachma Bina Das. Now the Alter Rebbe will go on to explain 2 points, and this will occupy the remainder of the chapter. Point number 1, what are the 3 intellectual faculties of Chachma Bina Das? What is their essence, their significance, their function and purpose, and how these faculties actually become the mothers, the source and the origin of the emotional experience of man, and all of this, how it is from the perspective of the divine soul. In later Prakim, we will see, Perek Vav, the Alter Rebbe discusses the fact that the animal soul, the vital, natural, self-indulgent soul of man, also possesses these 10 faculties. But over there, the 10 faculties are oriented and directed towards self, versus the divine soul experiences all these 10 faculties as a godly experience, because the essence of this soul is a perpetual sense of communion and relationship to Hashem, a soul that gravitates and pines to connect with its divine source. Let's learn insight. Ubir ha'inyan. Ubir ha'inyan, the explanation of the matter, the explanation of the idea of these 3 intellectual processes described above, as well as explaining how these 3 faculties produce the middah, is the emotional experience, is as follows. Ki hine haseichel shebenefesh hamaskelis shehu hamaskel kol davar. The intellectual faculty, the seichel of the nefesh hamaskelis, of the soul that expresses itself through this faculty, the soul that cogitates, the soul that experiences an intellectual idea. So this seichel, shehu hamaskil kol davar, which conceives any matter, nikra b'shem chachma. This is given the appellation of chachma. The word chachma describes and articulates the experience of the intellectual faculty of the nefesh, which is maskil kol davar, which conceives every matter. And the reason for this, he says, because chachma is a combination of two words, koyachma, the potential or the faculty of what is. Ma means what is. Chachma. Ches, chaf, mem, chaf, ches, mem, hey. So the first part of the word is chaf, ches, that makes kayach. And the second part of the word is mem, hey, that makes ma. So chachma is a combination of these two words, kayach, ma. Ukishamizboinen, ukishamaitzi, kayche, elapoil. When one brings forth this concentrated idea from the potential into the actual, shemizbainin b'sichloi lahavin davar la'ashuroi ula amkai, that is, when one cogitates with his intellect in order to understand a matter full well and delves to its very depth, mitoich ezed var chachma hamuskel b'sichloi, as it evolves from the concept which he had conceived in his intellect, nikra bina. This stage of the process is termed bina. Before we go further, let me explain what is the Alter Rebbe teaching us over here. It is a common experience that people often experience, especially those who are into learning and contemplating and the learning process, that one has a great dilemma on a certain issue. Something that perturbs him, that bothers him. He is seeking a solution for a specific issue, whatever it may be. An intellectual issue, an emotional issue, a psychological issue, a practical issue. So the person has this dilemma. He needs a solution. And he thinks about it for days. When he walks into three, he thinks about it. When he goes to sleep, he thinks about it. In the middle of supper, he thinks about it. He cannot get his mind off this dilemma. Suddenly, a flash, a solution enters his mind. Something creeps into his mind. He thinks it's great. He has it. He's not ready to tell anyone else, his friend, his wife, his child, his colleague. Why? Because he feels that he still needs to work it out. It's still not so clear and articulated that he can relate it to someone else. He still has to work it out. Especially you have this, for example, when one is learning Gemara or any other sefer of Torah or Lahavdil, other wisdoms that require deep concentration and attachment and contemplation. So the person reads through a piece of Gemara, learns the commentators, and does not understand a word. So what do? You learn it again. And he learns it again, he tries harder to understand, and once again he fails to comprehend what is going on. So either some people give up, it's not for me, but a serious student studies it again and reads the text from beginning to end, slowly and totally concentrates on the idea he's trying to comprehend, once and twice and three times, and if he doesn't understand, he does it again, and then suddenly a flash enters his mind, a lightning, so to speak, and he feels, I have it. It's clear. I have something in my mind which answers the question which will allow me to comprehend it. So a friend who saw this sudden response comes over, you tell me what the answer is. I can't tell it to you. Why can't you tell it to me? I'm not sure about it. I still have to work it out. I still have to apply it to the details. I still have to hold on to it. And he cannot talk about it yet. And the question is, this is a phenomenon that an average human being experiences. What is the reason for this nebulous state of being? On one hand, you feel you have it. There is a certain clarity that entered your mind, that illuminated your cognitive faculties. You feel satiated and satisfied. You feel there is something that will be able to cover the problem and solve the dilemma. But nevertheless, if you do not hold on to that idea, it will fall out of your mind and you'll forget it and it'll be lost. You'll have to start all over again. It will dissipate. Together with that, you cannot explain it to anybody else. You cannot articulate it even to yourself. If at this moment someone will say, so how does it answer the question? You're not certain how it answers the question. But you just know that it answers the question. You're still not certain how it will cover all the issues, how it can be applied to all the details, how it can indeed answer all the facets of the dilemma. What is the explanation in this? Chassidus explains it thus. Whenever two distinct entities that have no relationship with each other are combined and merged together, there is always a question which side, which party will be the dominant one and which one will be the subservient one. Just as in physical reality, everyone understands you cannot place a chair in the territory that a table occupies. Either you move the table and the chair comes in, or the table remains and the chair stays out, or you make a compromise. You cut the table in half, and you cut the chair in half, and you put the chair in the territory of the table. This is a sheer physicality that a child understands when he plays Lego. Then the same is true regarding emotional, psychological, and spiritual issues. Regarding a relationship of two distinct individuals, a relationship where they are to coexist together in a serious way, the question is always, either one will be the dominant one and the second individual will be subservient in the relationship, or vice versa, or they will both compromise and find middle ground where they can meet and merge together without totally losing their respective individual faculties and traits. The same is true regarding distinct issues, even metaphysical issues. And that is, when two realities come together, which reality gives room and space for the other one to enter? The cognitive experience is an experience that brings two entities together. On one side stands a human being with his luggage or her luggage, a human being with his intellectual attributes, energies, faculties, modes of expression, the cognitive ability of the human being, or what we call seichel. On the other hand, on the other side stands a muskel. What is a muskel? That is the word in Hebrew that denotes an intellectual concept, idea. The human being is attempting to understand, to comprehend, to discern, and introduce into his cognitive faculties this intellectual concept, which he was not aware of before, which he did not understand before, which is something outside of him. It's a new reality to him. Over here comes the question. When these two realities unite, come together, which one is the dominant in the relationship and which one is the subservient? Which one of the two entities moves and gives space to the other one? Is the cognitive faculty the dominant element in the union? Is that the main aspect of this experience? And the intellectual idea is thus subservient to the human's cognitive faculties? Or is it vice versa? Thus, indeed, in the cognitive experience, there are two stages. And in the first stage, the idea, the intellectual idea, is the dominant one in the relationship, is the one that takes over, that overwhelms, that overshadows everything else. And in that stage, the cognitive faculty is subservient and submerged in the intellectual idea that has overwhelmed it. Or the second stage that follows that is the stage where the intellectual idea becomes subservient and subordinate to the cognitive faculty, which now is supreme. And this, if you wish, is Chachma and Bina. What is indeed the process of understanding something? Again, back to our previous metaphor. You are learning that piece of Gemara, or Rashi, or Taisvis, or Rishonim, or Acharonim, or whatever you are learning. And you don't understand it. You don't understand it. So you start over, all over again. And you learn it again, slowly, intensely. You're concentrating, and you still do not understand a word. You just cannot understand the idea. Either you totally don't understand it, or you have questions, whatever the case may be, everyone according to their intellectual capacity. So you begin again, and you start all over again. And at this moment, if you're a serious student, you suspend everything you know, everything you think about, everything you're aware of. You are totally attached and connected to these words of Gemara. There is nothing else in your life at the moment. There is nothing else existing in your reality, in your world, in your universe, in your mind. You totally attach yourself and concentrate to the idea. What you're doing at this moment is you're suspending yourself, including your cognitive faculty, to the idea which is transcribed in the Gemara. You cannot at that moment even be aware of the fact that you're thinking or contemplating. You are totally submerged and overwhelmed by the words of the Gemara. And at that moment, suddenly, a spark, a flash. The idea conveyed in the Gemara illuminates your mind, enters your cognitive faculty, and you sense suddenly a sudden relief, a sudden illumination that came from outside, that did not exist, and this illumination clarifies everything. But you cannot articulate it, you cannot define it, you cannot relate it to anyone else. Why? Because at this stage of the relationship, your cognitive faculties are subservient, are subordinate, are being overwhelmed and overshadowed and overtaken by the actual intellectual idea. What happens at this moment is you suspended yourself, so you allowed the idea in its full glory, in its infinite beauty, to enter into your mind. But now comes stage two of the process. And stage two is, okay, stop, and now you emerge. Now your intellectual faculties come to the front, come to the fore. And you take this illumination, this spark, this lightning, so to speak, as a metaphor, and you begin dissecting it, compartmentalizing it, dividing it into sections and subsections, connecting it to all facets of the dilemma, seeing how this aspect answers this question, and this aspect explains this query, and this point reconciles this contradiction, and so on and so forth. And suddenly you create beams and walls and tapestries and coverings and doors and furniture until you have a beautiful intellectual mansion that you created in your mind. And now you call over your friend and you say, now I'll be able to explain it to you. And you explain him the question and then the answer, and the answer has so many details suddenly. There is the first stage of the answer and the second stage of the answer, and the proof to the answer and the question you can ask and the answer and the way you answer that question, and so on and so forth. All the different aspects and details of a beautiful palace, that an intellectual palace that has been created by your cognitive mind. And this is the reason why, if we are to examine our own experiences, we'll see a very interesting thing regarding the first stage of the cognitive experience and the second stage. If you can recall from your own experience, and it will certainly happen to you in the future, at that stage of Chachma, when that thought entered your mind, there is a certain clarity, a certain beauty, and defined clarity that you will never have again. When you struggle and take this concept and dissect it and compartmentalize it, you will stand thirsty, searching for those 10 words that entered your mind. There was such an unambiguity about them, a beauty, a glamour about them, a just sense of clarity that does not exist in the next stage. In the stage two, there exists a beauty of its own. a beauty of its own, where you have all the details in a very clear, articulated, and definitive manner. But there's a certain intense relationship with the idea that you have only at the first stage of Chachma that does not exist in Bina. That's point number one, difference. Another point is, in the first stage, you will never have many details. It will always be a flash of wisdom, a flash of insight, and that's it. Versus in the second stage, the flash is dissected and compartmentalized. It's characterized by details. What is the reason for this? Another metaphor for Chachma and Bina can be the difference between seeing and hearing. Alter Rebbe uses this metaphor in another of his Sfarim. There is when a person sees a beautiful piece of art with his own eyes, and then there is the person hearing about it from someone else. Someone who is an intelligent man, who knows how to communicate an event, a phenomenon that he has observed, comes to the human being who is skilled and conveys to him a beautiful piece of art that he has seen today, with all its details. What is the difference? In both cases, you are aware and knowledgeable exactly of what this piece of art is. The difference is quite simple. In seeing, you come and you look at the piece of art, and the first moment, you see it all. You are overwhelmed by its beauty, by the keen skill that went into this piece of art. You are overwhelmed by the talent of the artist who has taken canvas, pigment, and a brush, and has created such a live story. When you hear about the piece of art, you are not overtaken by it in its totality. You hear detail after detail. One point, another point, the home, the tree, the person, the fight, the blood in the corner, the child crying. And finally, after all the details, you construct detail after detail, and in your mind you build a full picture, and you visualize in your perception that complete piece of art. So in the first experience of seeing, you begin with the general, with the total, and then you begin dissecting the details. After you have seen it, and seen it in its totality, you begin looking at this part, at this color, at this aspect of the painting, etc. In hearing, it's vice versa. You begin with the details, and only then do you construct a total, full-fledged painting. On a deeper level, what happens by seeing is, the piece of art, again, there's a relationship. Whenever you see something, there's a relationship. There's a relationship between you, your vantage point, your perception, and the object, the thing that you are seeing, that you are observing. When you see something, the object that you see is the dominant one in the relationship. It overwhelms you. It takes you over. It permeates you. It penetrates you. You become subservient to the painting. When you hear something, the painting is not here to overtake you. You are the one who is the objective observer, who is judgmental about it, who is critical about it, who is comprehending point after point, detail after detail. You are the dominant one in the relationship. This is the difference between Chachma and Bina. Chachma and Bina, you suspend yourself. Since you suspend yourself, you allow for something outside of you to enter. As long as you remained within the parameters of your cognitive faculties, something truly new cannot be conceived by you. The moment you suspended yourself, you became a receptacle, a vessel. You made a hole, an opening, a door for a new insight, a new flash of wisdom to enter you. And therefore there will be a certain clarity that you will never be able to get again. You will never be able to capture it again. Why? Because it is only at this moment of Chachma, when the intellectual faculty came in, when the intellectual faculty revealed itself, expressed itself. The later stages already, that's gone, that's finished. Now you begin the process. Now it's suddenly the human being, with his finite intellectual cognitive faculties, taking that flash of wisdom, taking that object, and he becomes the boss. So he begins dissecting it and compartmentalizing it and divining it and subdividing it, subdividing it, and creating from it a beautiful mansion. In the first stage, the details will be submerged in the intensity of the experience. All the details are there. In that flash of wisdom, all the details are there. But they're submerged. They're there in a state of potentiality, in a state of bekayach. Why? Why are they not revealed? Because the detailed intellectual factors are submerged and nullified within the intense experience of the quintessential concept. Versus in being, it's the other way around. Over here, there's only details. Over here, you don't have the essence of the concept anymore. The concept left. Now you stand alone. And you take that, and you begin applying it, and comprehending it, and dissecting it in all facets, until you build a beautiful mansion. So there's a certain beauty in Chachma that doesn't exist in Bina, and a certain beauty in Bina that doesn't exist in Chachma. Thus, we call Chachma conception. Chachma is when you conceive the idea. Bina we call comprehension. Each one is crucial in the intellectual process. Many times we do not discern this process occurring. However, if a person at certain times has a very difficult dilemma, we can discern in our own experience this process, or if a person's intellectual faculties are working very slow, like after sometimes one wakes up from anesthesia, etc., one can also discern these two stages of Chachma and Bina. But indeed, usually they work together almost simultaneously. But nevertheless, there is always this process of first conception and then comprehension. The Zohar calls the two faculties of Chachma and Bina train rein de la misparshin. Two friends that are inseparable. Chachma and Bina are colleagues, they work together. Chachma is the conceiving faculty, it conceives, and then Chachma passes it down to Bina, and Bina comprehends. The Sefer Yetzirah tells us, Havein b'chachma v'chachayim b'bina. You have to experience Bina and Chachma and Bina. What is that? If you remain in the realm of Chachma, you will have the essence of the concept, but it will never be able to be of any intellectual value or use. You must introduce the Bina. Take that flash and dissect it. Take that flash and divide it. On the other hand, after the process of Bina, you built the entire structure. Now, Chachayim b'Bina. Now again, you have to come back to the essence, to the point. After you have all those details, and you built a mansion, a beautiful building, with 6 floors, with 8 bedrooms in every floor, in the intellectual experience, now again you have to come back to the quintessence, to the point, to the bottom line of what you had in the original Chachma experience. But once again, the Chachayim b'Bina will never be like the first original Chachma. That moment of illumination never comes again. And we often struggle when we're in the details. Give me back that flash again. It was so clear. Many people at the stage of Chachma write down what they sensed. So later in the stage of Bina, you have words to refer to. But nevertheless, those words will not allow you to experience it again. Those words will just be indicators, reminders of the experience. But that actual sense of light, of Chachma, you will never have again. In one of his discourses, Rabbi Shneur Zalman compares Chachma to a lightning, a Barak HaMavrik. And I remember I was once on a canoe trip, and I got lost. And it was lightning and raining and thunders, and it was in the midst of a huge forest, and I had another 4 hours to reach our destination. I was in a canoe with another friend of mine, a colleague of mine, and it was quite serious and dangerous, to be frank. So we immediately got off the water and were searching a forest, a desert. And I don't want to get into it, but we came across certain nice animals, undomesticated animals, and suddenly we have seen a hut, a home. So we went to the home and under the circumstances crashed down the door and entered the home. It was pitch dark. And you're dealing over here with a forest. There's no remnants even of electricity or light from anywhere. Nature as it was created without any human interventions. So we're standing there. It's pitch dark. We cannot see anything in the home. Certainly not see a light switch, etc. And then suddenly by divine providence a lightning came. A Barak HaMavrik. And of course we made the bracha, Eisim Eisim Reishis, and suddenly the home was illuminated. But the lightning was for a split second, it did not help us too much. By the time we looked, it was over. And at that moment, 10 consecutive lightnings came one after the other. Literally, one after the other. And so for 10 seconds we had a clear home. We saw over there was a candle, and matches, Immediately as the lightnings ended, everything was back, pitch dark, but we knew the candle is there, the matches are there. We went in, we lit the candle, and we stayed there for the night. This is exactly what Chachma is. Chachma is a lightning that comes and goes. It says, the Zayar Vayihi Oir Da Chachma. Oir, there was light. This is Chachma. Bina is defined in Zayar as Chayshech, as being dark. Conception, light, and comprehension, dark. And the answer is yes. Chachma is the moment you allowed yourself to experience something beyond you. That's why you will never experience Chachma without total concentration. However, you could be walking in the street and you had a dilemma for several days and suddenly, flash, it's solved. What happened? You were concentrating on it. Subconsciously, you were daydreaming and your dreams, your fantasies took you to that issue, to that dilemma. And suddenly, subconsciously, you were so attached to it that there was a flash of wisdom. There was an illumination over here. And that's sometimes even a deeper concentration. It's a subconscious concentration where you're totally connected to it. You're so connected, you're not even aware you're connected. And then only later, after you have the solution, you realized how for the past 10 minutes you were walking the streets or the park and you were thinking just about this. So Chachma will never happen if there is no suspension of self. And that's the true ability of Chachma. Chachma is that cognitive faculty that allows us to put ourselves on the side and to focus and become attached and connected in a very powerful and intense manner to a specific issue, intellectual issue, cognitive issue that is beyond us. And then there will be a lightning that will suddenly illuminate our entire cognitive being. And that illumination will be so intense, so powerful, so beautiful, such clarity, such unambiguity, such richness. There is a certain aristocracy, a Reichheit, it's called in Yiddish, in the intellectual experience at the stage of Chachma. Bina is already stage 2. The lightning has left. Now you're on your own. Take that and begin dissecting it. Begin seeing how it relates to all the details and construct from that a beautiful match. There will be a certain clarity in Bina and a certain delight in Bina that doesn't exist in Chachma, of course. There's a certain delight when someone has the full picture with all its details. There is nothing like it. But nevertheless, there is that delight of Bina, but there's a certain delight of Chachma that will never exist in Bina. A moment. This is what the Alter Rebbe is teaching us over here. Chachma is called Koyachma. What is Koyachma? Two interpretations. First and foremost, Koyachma, the potentiality of what is. Ma means what is. And that means Chachma is that cognitive attribute, that cognitive faculty that allows us to conceive a concept regarding which we ask, what is it? We do not have it clear, set down with all its ramifications. We still probe and ask the question, what is this concept? Only after Bina, after the experience of Bina, do we have it clear down the road with all its turns, its rights and its lefts and its middles and its ups and its downs, and all the ramifications of the idea. All its results, all its consequences. In Bina we have the idea in full breadth and length and depth, in all its abstractions and its limitations. All its parameters and ramifications emerge only in Bina. So Chachma is the stage of Koyachma. But there's a deeper interpretation of Koyachma based on the Pasuk in Parshas Bishalach, Perek Tezayin, Pasuk Zayin, when the Jewish people complained to Moshe and Aaron upon leaving Mitzrayim that they do not have food to eat. It would have been better, they said, if we would stay in Egypt. At least over there we had meat and bread rather than dying in a desert from starvation. So Moshe and Aaron, after communicating to them the words of Hashem, that Hashem will grant them food and sustenance, Moshe and Aaron said, V'nachnu ma kisalinu alav. What are we that you should incite complaints against us?